when people are standing up for racism or standing up for anti-Semitism, you're not standing up for someone else. You're standing up for a society.
Not sure what a real step looks like.
We're not trying to blend into one. No, we're trying to all be unique. I want the opportunity to show up and be seen for who I am. All of these allowances that we make to then have more hate and more fear and more division in our society, all of that, that's what we have to have no tolerance for. What Jews represent is an other. For someone to be advising Jews not to be so obvious, I said I gotta be very obvious.
Welcome to the In Search of More podcast. I am your host, Ellie Nash. Join me weekly on my quest for more. More from myself and more from this world. We'll see you on the other side.
So Ellie, as long as I've known you, there's times where like you didn't wear a kippah or a yarmulke. Oh, first of all, I need a crash course on the right name, right? And what happened, like why do some people wear colored ones? Like what are the rules and regulations? A crash course, and then sort of like the reason behind it, like once and for all. I don't think I've ever asked you that, which is odd because we've been friends a long time.
On the yarmulke?
On the yarmulke? Or kippah? Or both?
Both.
Okay.
I think kippah is like a shortened version, like a nickname for yarmulke.
Got it.
And my understanding of the word yarmulke is two Hebrew words together, which is yare malka, which is fear of the king, fear of God. The idea for it is that it's a constant reminder that there's someone above us, but that's not the reason I wear it.
Really?
Really.
Why do you wear it?
Why I started wearing it. So as you mentioned, you've known me for a bunch of years. I didn't wear it for probably 10 plus years, unless yeah. I was in...
You put it on one day, I'm like, wait a minute, you're Jewish?
No, you knew that. There was no there was no secrets. But I didn't always wear one, and I don't wear it for religious reasons. Many people, and the way I grew up, was wearing it because there was a rabbinical law that at all times we should have this as a reminder, and certainly when saying a blessing, there should be... our head should be covered, and I believe anytime we mention God's name, our head should be covered. So there's certain laws around it, but that's not the reason I started wearing it. The reason I started wearing it is because a few years ago, so I think this was 2020, there was a politician in New York, and I looked it up afterwards, and I wasn't able to find it. There was a ton of anti-Semitism going on in New York. You know, 2020 brought out a lot of people's... darker side. And it was a lot of hate. And some politician said, maybe Jews shouldn't be so obvious, or maybe some shouldn't wear a yarmulke. And there are versions of this that were expressed many times. For example, my grandparents lived in France. And when I was a child going to visit them, it wasn't uncommon for me to be advised to wear a baseball cap or something to cover the fact that I was wearing a yarmulke. And I kind of wondered, you know, my dad didn't usually come with us on the trips. My dad was much more obviously Orthodox. It was all of his clothes were obviously Orthodox, a long jacket or even a dark suit and white shirt and his long beard. He couldn't put on a baseball cap and hide it, in other words. So I kind of wondered what someone else would do if they weren't an 8 or 10 year old kid that can cover a yarmulke with a baseball hat. But at those points in time, what I understood was, okay, this is Europe. And Europe just treats the Jews a little bit differently. So, you know, we'll do it that way. But back home in America, we don't have to worry about this. We can walk the streets as a proud Jew. And when I heard this in America, for someone to be advising Jews not to be so obvious, I said I got to be very obvious about this. So I wear it for Jewish pride reasons. I wear it for, that's why it's white. It doesn't have to be white, and you asked about the different colors. Colors do signify something, not colors in that way, but you'll kind of know where someone is from oftentimes based on their yarmulke, or you'll know which background or what kind of traditions maybe they follow based on their yarmulke, but there's no laws attached to that. It's just a head covering, and you know, different people wear wear different things, the same way you may understand something about someone from their t-shirts, but you know, the rule is just come into the restaurant with a shirt, right? Not, but it does say something. It does say something about different people. The reason I wear a white one is A, I like it, but B, that's kind of the statement, is that I think it's wildly inappropriate to suggest to someone that, you know, imagine they said to black people, there's too much racism going on. From now on, anytime you guys are walking at night, make sure you're in groups so that no one attacks you. I mean, no, that's not the way we're going to address this. We're going to address this by dealing with the division and the hate and, you know, however we choose to call it out, but not by catering to it in some way. And yes, it might be a little bit more dangerous for that one person who chooses to make himself more obviously Jewish, but it definitely makes it more dangerous for all of us when we don't do that. In Germany in 2019, there was like a slew of anti-Semitic incidents and a German chancellor or something. For some reason, I remember his name, Felix Klein. And he said, maybe it would be a better idea if Jews didn't wear a kippah in public, or Jews weren't so obviously Jewish in public, or we can't guarantee safety. I forget the exact language that he used, but we can't guarantee safety if, you know, Jews are making themselves obviously Jewish. And no, maybe they should have had like National Yarmulke Day in Germany, where find a Jew, right? Figure it out, or some mention of solidarity.
They're like different sizes, because I feel like I saw some smaller than the one you
for sure.
Know.
Yeah, for sure.
Does that have any significance?
Comfort. Yeah, it's not a law or a rule or anything like that.
I'm thinking back to a previous episode we did where we talked about the work being to ascend from animal to human, mm-hmm. free choice. And I'm inside of that, I'm just thinking how ritualistic we are as humans.
In terms of?
In terms of everything. Like, we have rituals around every single thing. Rituals around religion. I think back once, I was living, there was a townhouse I was living in Margate, and there was like an accident right outside the property, and everyone like put up the posters and the candles. And I remember driving by one day and I'm like, it's so interesting, the ritual around death, like how we like, you know, everything has like a ritual. No real point there, but it just made me think about how ritualistic we are as humans. And maybe that's a separation, maybe?
The rituals?
Yeah.
We can look at a separation or look at things that bring us together, right?
So you wear a yarmulke.
Jewish pride. Jewish pride, individual level, but also as a message regarding hate in general. Because division, hate, it's all equal. It doesn't, there's no person who's only has hate for the other. That's hate in the heart that becomes expressed in this way. There has not been a society who has allowed anti-Semitism to really flourish that has done well. If you look through history, every single society that's been like a little bit too tough on the Jews has descended shortly thereafter. That's not a punishment from God. That's not the way I see it. It's just, if you have a society where hate and division are allowed to build up to that magnitude, this thing is going to crumble. It's just not going to work. So Jews, for whatever reason, have often been a lightning rod for this, as have black people in a lot of ways. When people are standing up for racism or standing up for anti-Semitism, you're not standing up for someone else. You're standing up for a society that you want to have that does not have division and hate, because once you allow it to get past a certain point, this thing crumbles for all of us. Because today we go to the most obvious difference of the other and we say, this person's white, that person's black. But next thing we're going white, Latino, male, female, old, young, rich, poor. They've never stopped with the divisions. They've never stopped. And you go oldest children, youngest children, you know, it'll never stop. If we keep allowing division and hate in our society, then right, the very first family, Adam had two kids, one of them killed the other. That can happen. It's not that can happen anywhere at all times. That's part of the message of that, I think. And the way around that is not continuing to other people and say, oh, this is different, and I have to stand up for that person who's different. We're not standing up to defending someone else. We're standing up to defending ourselves and our society and saying, if we allow this division and hate to continue to fester and grow, we're not going to have anything for our kids. Which isn't that the point of, it's not what we all say. We want to leave the world to our, we want to leave our kids a better world than we found it.
Right.
And so, yes, there's an individual message around my own Jewish pride, because that's the way I express it, because that's where I come from. But it's also a collective message to everyone else around that. We're not trying to blend into one. No, we're trying to all be unique and have our separate rituals and have our separate values and have our separate values, maybe not a good word, but have our separate rituals, have our separate identities, have our separate ideas, and in that be able to come together and and respect that. So this,
yeah, I think differences should be celebrated.
For sure.
Not weaponized, but celebrated.
For sure.
I want to ask you something. Anti-Semitism. Can you define that for me? Because as a black man in America, I hear a bunch of different definitions, directly and indirectly. I've heard people say, like, a black person can't be anti-Semitic because essentially they're Semite. Unpack it for me. What does anti-Semitism mean? And is there a difference between anti-Semitism and racism, specifically towards black people?
First of all, that statement of I can't be anti-Semitic because I'm a Semite, mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't mean anything, because you're just using the same word with a different definition to make a point. I can say I'm African-American, right? My mom is from Morocco. My dad is American, so I can't be racist because I'm African-American. Does that make any sense to anybody? How did that work? My mom being born in Africa, somehow I can't. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know how to define anti-Semitism. I don't even know why that word is the word that we use for Jew hatred. People can get lost in the definitions. I won't. What is clear is just, it's, what do we all want? We want to be able to walk into a room and for all of your preconceived notions about what you think I am, I want the opportunity to show up and be seen for who I am. That's all we want. Mm. And anyone who can't do that, that's not okay. Obviously, there are extremes of that. And at the extreme end of that, we have racism. But the ideal is for everyone to be able to walk into a room and be given a fresh chance. And if someone's on a date with a woman, for her not to bring her past experiences of men she knew and assume that this man is like that man is what that guy needs on that date. And for a black person to come into an interview and say, I don't care what happened with black people in the past. This is me and I want my own shot at it. And I would say there's the reverse. When someone tells me, oh, I had great experience with Jews. I don't care. I want you to have the experience with me. I want to be seen for who I am. I think it's what we all want to do, and be able to walk in that. And that's why I reacted that way to the definition of it. Say, did he cross the line? Did he not cross the line? Is he allowed to say it? Is he not allowed to say it? No, like all the division, all the hate, all of it is bad. Just because you're Jewish, just because you're a Semite, just because you've been persecuted also, just all of these allowances that we make to then have more hate and more fear and more division in our society, all of that, that's what we have to have no tolerance for.
Yeah, I'm with that. Stronger together. But we can certainly hold on to what makes us unique and stand on it.
We should be proud. And I think that it's a cancer in society right now, that trying to like blur the lines between everyone. And the only one who's allowed to be highlighted in some way is the most persecuted. But I mean, let me ask you a question. I mean, what do you do in your case when you have all these messages in society about racism and black people and, you know, some of what appears as anti-racism, but is anything but, your wife is not black. So how do you integrate? What's your viewpoint on everything that's going on? What do you see? What do you say?
Yeah, love is colorless, for sure. And I think, ask me the question again to make sure I understand what you're asking.
There seems to be a suggestion in society that certain people, I've heard it said differently, that a black person can't be racist, even against a white person. So when you said a Semite cannot be anti-Semitic, that's, okay, some play on the word Semite and anti-Semitic, and whether it's the same meaning and the same word, you know, irrelevant. But you've heard that concept, that a black person can't be racist. Is that true? Is that not true? And in the context of that, having, that to me feels like a division. I just want to say, that to me feels like a division. So what my question was, is seeing that there's division where there may be an allowance made for someone who's been persecuted heavily in this country, and some of our relationship has helped me to understand that on a much deeper level than just reading the history books or understanding what's not in the history books and all of that. That being said, you have a wife who is not that, who's not black. So when someone's saying, oh, you can do something, right? You have this, but your wife doesn't. She's you also. Your kids are half your wife.
Right. So there's some nuance there, meaning what you are and what you identify as are two different things. So if you take away a yarmulke, I would identify you as a white man, but you probably identify as a Jew first and then maybe whatever else, or just a Jew.
Right? Just a Jew.
Right. So there's that. So I think people, anyone that has some sort of black lineage in them, or some sort of, so like for example, my wife's grandfather is black, right? And her mom is black and Chinese and okay. Portuguese. So so I think there's part of it where, like, for example, there's like this one drop rule that was like weaponized back in the day. Like, if you have one drop of black in you, you're black. Right. So I think there's a nuance there where, like, what people actually are and what they identify.
When you say weaponized, so if someone has one drop of black
in like, them, yeah, like then they're black slavery, and therefore, for example. Yeah. Like,
oh, okay. That's enough for someone to be.
Yeah. You would
enslaved.
Be treated as,
okay.
as a black person.
Interesting.
And persecuted for it.
So this is kind of turning that on its head.
Yeah, I think what you are and what you identify, that's a nuance that shouldn't be overlooked. Also, I think back to Tinashe Coates wrote a book called Between Me and the World. It's basically like an open letter to his young son, just kind of warning him about the perils of being black and also like inviting him to be hopeful.
But what's the message of it?
Meaning that like racism is a construct. It's not an actual thing. It was something that was made up.
Correct.
To divide people.
100%. That's exactly my point. Because we can keep making these divisions.
Right.
That was what I was saying earlier, is we can keep going within families, and then we can say, okay, there's a difference between black and white. I don't identify as white because a white person won't see me that way. Right. The Jews have always been whatever the Jews have always served as the other for whoever needs them to be the other. Does that make sense? For whoever needs an other, the Jew has served a perfect role. So for a black person, a Jew may be a white man. For a white person, a Jew is not.
It's not there.
For a capitalist, the Jews are communist. Rudy said this, for a communist, the Jews are capitalist, right? So, you know, the Jews have been identified as filthy vermin, which are worthless, and the controllers of the world with all the money. So, right, both. So it's really what it represents, what Jews represent, is an other. And for whatever reason, the Jews have been able to appear to be an other to many different people. That's so, but it comes back to the same thing of hating the other. what's that poem? First they started with the Jews and I said nothing because I wasn't a Jew, and they started with the communists and I said nothing because I wasn't a communist. They went to the Bolsheviks and I said nothing because I wasn't a Bolshevik, and you know, and then eventually they came to me and there was no one left standing up for me. I don't know if you know that that poem, because at the end of the day, once there is division and hate, once we start going in those directions, we end up with a society that's intolerable of other, and that can be like with Adam's two children, right? The first man, it's two children. It can be an older brother and younger brother, and he's the other. Why? Because I think it was something about his sacrifice was accepted in some way. Abel's sacrifice was, Cain perceived it as being accepted. It was actually accepted, and Cain's wasn't, so he became the other. And so what's it? It's all back to division and hate. I think that's a real conversation we have to have while we're fighting whatever it is we need to fight, racism and anti-Semitism and everything else, is what is the ideal? Can we agree on the ideal? What are we trying to get to?
Do you think we can?
I don't know. Can we agree on ideal? I definitely don't agree with the ideal that a lot of people seem to be putting out there.
Yeah, I can say I'm hopeful that we can agree on the ideal because I know you, right? And we're different through society's lens, right? You're Jewish, I'm Black, all that stuff. But
I'm the only one here that's African American.
Technically, yeah.
Technically.
Right.
It just messed up the whole system.
Right, right. No, for sure. Right. But no, I think making it like widespread adoption, it's like on one hand, I'm hopeful. Like you sit down to one-on-one, like this is the truth.
Right.
Like you're my guy no matter what, right? Like we're friends. Like I know you through and through. I know you. But I think adopting it on a large scale, I'm not sure what a real step looks like. Because people are trying, right? It isn't all bad. And it seems to be like...
People are trying, but it seems to be moving in the wrong direction. And that's what's confusing me. Mm. And I'll tell you, even within our relationship. So we've been friends since what, 2008, 2009? Mm. And maybe it took a couple of years, we became good friends.
Right.
And hanging out all the time. And I became much more conscious of my Jewishness and your Blackness over the last couple of years. That's not progress. That's the opposite of it. I've gotten multiple comments about the fact that this podcast is done between an Orthodox Jew and a Black person, and shouldn't we do X, Y, and Z? And it's like, no, the podcast is done by Ellie and Ryan.
Right.
Why do we have to keep, why does that have to be a highlight of it? Why does that have to continue to be featured? And obviously it's there, but to make it almost the primary feature of this, and so many people have referred to it as that, and no, it is one element. And today I have my yarmulke, and a couple of years ago when we did conversations, I didn't have it, and that's not what this is about. Like continuing to highlight the divisions, which seems to be where it's headed, and that's why I said I think it's important that we can establish an ideal. Maybe that's not the purpose of this conversation.
Yeah,
but.
Or maybe it is, right? Meaning, I would like to think we can be an example of just even tolerance and just space, right? Like, because I've always, you know, sort of like felt that, you know, you're a Jewish guy, I'm a Black guy, right? Just from my lens on life. But knowing you, what it did, it dispersed a lot of stereotypes in me, which was tremendously beneficial, because now it's like I get to be honest. I get to be like really myself. And if there's stuff that I say that you don't get because we're different, that's amazing. If you need me to break it down, let me know, and vice versa. Like, you've taught me so much things about Judaism. Just it's been like really, really educational, even just from like me loving history, right? And I think of like, man, like I really love history, and now I get to like learn something from a dear friend that has crazy historical context, right? Forget Judaism and everything else, just the history of it. So I think, where was I going with my point? I think the fact that we got the opportunity to know each other and we have a genuine relationship that anyone should be lucky enough to have this. And I think you got to be like tolerant, say, like, you know, the division is very pervasive, and I agree with you. And I think it's a distraction also, right? Meaning that it feels to me innately that, like, while we're bickering about our differences, like, something else is happening above us.
What do you think that is?
Meaning the systems, the infrastructure, the people, the things that are, like, want to hold on to their position, right? Whether a person or a thing or an institution, that's what's moving forward. That's what's happening. And like, you know, and we're down here bickering, and it's like, yeah.
Right. The power structure always exists to preserve itself.
Right.
That's
right.
That's what it ends up becoming, right? People start institutions, and the institutions somehow have this life of its own that must be preserved.
Even institutions of thought.
Of everything.
Right.
All of it. I've seen schools make disastrous educational decisions. You say, how can you do that? You're a school. Your primary purpose was to educate children. I'll give you an example. I know of a school. You know, I've been involved in charitable pursuits over the years, and I was looking at a particular school, thinking like maybe I heard very, very good things about it, and maybe this could be a school that I could support and learn a lot from. It was relatively new and younger, didn't have that years of, you know, kind of crap that gets built into the system. So I heard really nice things about the school. And then as I was talking to them, learning more information, I learned that the first day of school, this was a private school, the first day of school, the teachers were told to line up all the kids who hadn't paid tuition outside in the hallway for their parents to pick them up. So you're talking about a private school in a community that, you know, certain private schools, it's a religious private school, a Jewish private school specifically, in a community where a lot are unable to afford the full, you know, the full cost of it, but for religious reasons, ideological reasons, they don't want to go to public school. So there's an understanding that certain times, you know, costs need to be supplemented and things like that. Mm-hmm. And in that environment, it made sense to a group of educators to line up all students whose tuition hadn't come in on the first day of school and wait for their parents to pick them up.
That's crazy.
I'm thinking, it's like, in what world did it make sense for you to embarrass a child, possibly permanently?
Right.
Possibly permanently. This kid was pulled out of his class. This kid was pulled out of his class. And at the end, I said, I can't be involved with a school that would make this decision. But more importantly, what happened there? What happened? Because there was no one who said, oh, guys, let's make a school. And in the school, we're going to embarrass kids which don't pay. That's not what happened. And in this case, it was even so far beyond that because it was the first day of school. You don't even know what happened. We don't even know if what happened was there was a check that got lost in the mail or an administrator who didn't apply something to the right place. But even without that, but I'm saying this [S2] Right. [S1] Was so far beyond the pale of anything reasonable. And within the best interest of children who they claim to be an institution to educate, protect,
right,
help, and they're hurting them. So what happened? The institution started to become sacred in and of itself, and we had to protect the institution. But that was a long segue to say that institutions end up becoming about preserving themselves at a certain point in time. And in that, some of the best ways to do that, I mean, divide and conquer is a strategy for forever. We seem surprised by it, but yeah, there definitely seems to be some push, conscious or otherwise, to divide as much as possible. And it seems to be pushed by the same people who are in power and the same people who are interested in staying in power. Have you heard of this study? I don't know if it's real or figurative. It doesn't make a difference. The idea is good. Of taking a jar, someone who took a jar, I think, with black ants and red ants in it, and when there's black and red ants, they live in harmony, no problem. But the second an outside force comes and shakes them up, the black ants start killing the red ants and the red ants start killing the black ants. Like they believe that in that moment that things didn't go well, instead of assuming that there was someone who shook the jar, the assumption becomes that the other is the one who caused the pain and the problems that they're experiencing right now. The antidote to that, and I want to riff on something you said earlier about, you know, there were certain stereotypes that you had to let go of when you met me, right? And I grew up in Crown Heights in the 80s and 90s, where there were race riots and everything else. It was not a very wonderful relationship between the Black community and the Jewish community where I grew up. In fact, it was a lot of hostility for many years. It's gotten better, but there was a lot of hostility for many years. So I would say, although I don't remember it, I imagine that could have been part of it as well for me, that there were certain stereotypes I had to let go of. But is that the ideal? Right? Is that the ideal? Or can we say clearly that, no, that's not the ideal? So yes, okay, so now we're in a place where society is that way, and we do have to get rid of certain stereotypes. But this is not the ideal. The ideal isn't to continue highlighting the division. The ideal is the same thing that would happen if my daughter and your daughter are playing together. At what age do they start noticing that they're different? That's the question. But at the youngest age, they don't.
Right.
It's not that they don't notice the difference. Of course.
Doesn't matter.
My son may come back from school and refer to someone as the person with red hair.
Right.
That's fine. Oh, my friend, she has red hair. Yeah, that's fine. But at what person do we start assuming that that person with red hair is so different than us? It's not at the youngest ages. So it's getting back to that ideal and that space where we're not constantly highlighting differences and highlighting divisions and giving explanations for why a Black person and an Orthodox Jew or whatever, or a Jew can sit and have a discussion. Why do I have to be a symbol for anything? So if we have to be now because society is so sick, great, okay. But it's not the ideal, and let's not pretend it is.
I agree. I think we're again, we can firmly say that we're doing this work and our intentions are pure. We're not getting hung up on a lot of these chambers of separation.
Right. But our intentions did not start as, oh, hey, this would be a pretty cool thing for a Jewish guy and a Black guy to talk. It was just two friends. And this kind of evolved, and we've shared in other episodes how that has happened, and how my journey intersected with yours, and you know, at different points of time, it connected in different ways. And right now that's happening in this way. And that's beautiful, and it's amazing.